Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and my co-pilot and navigator, Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or your home insurance. So then.
How are you, JP? You well?
I'm very good. Very good. Well, do you know what? Our guest today is a lady who has motorsport and all things automotive running through possibly every vein and artery in her body. When you see the term petrolhead, it might as well just say, Susie Perry. How are you, darling?
Oh, what a lovely introduction of my veins. Thank you. I'm really well. Yes, it's obviously, I'm locked down at my house in France, which has been quite fortunate, really. I've got a little bit of space, but yeah, it's been good. I've been busy.
Do you know what? Not a bad place to be locked down, eh?
Well, you know, and like I said there, really lucky because I've got a bit of space here and the weather's been a bit dodgy, to be honest. I think you've had better weather in the UK, but it's nice to have the garden and it's nice to be able to have a bit of nature and fall in love with things that I fell in love with when I was a child. That's what's happened to me during lockdown.
Oh, wow. And have you been baking? Because I did my first banana bread yesterday with my daughter, Alina. Do you know what? Every bowl, every utensil.
Were you like the Swedish chef from the Muppets with just flour everywhere?
Just mess everywhere.
It was carnage. Blender was going, mixers were going. But you know what? It was all right. It came out. But then again, I've just found out that actually it's the easiest thing to make. You just mix it all up and throw it in the oven.
You see, Jason, I can imagine you in the kitchen being a little bit like you are in a car, where you're sort of pushing all of the mechanical technology to the limit. The kind of blenders going off the scale.
Yeah, do you know what? It was busy. Anyway, we must get on to what we're here for. So, Suze, look, I've known you for quite a few years because we've done quite a lot of work together on Fifth Gear and other bits and bobs over the years. But where did it all start? Come on, you know, your passion for motorbikes, cars. When do you remember it all lighting the fire?
Slow build, I think, Jace, to be honest. I used to watch a lot on the telly. I loved watching it on the telly. But, of course, we didn't have Formula One every weekend on the telly when I was growing up on Grandstand. You just had the important Grand Prix. They didn't have full coverage for quite a while. I'm talking about in the 70s. And the same with bikes. You know, you just get kind of, you get it peppered throughout the year with the lovely Murray Walker commentating. So, you know, Murray's sort of synonymous with motorsport for me. In terms of actually driving and riding, I, you know, drove as soon as I could, got my license and it gave me that ultimate freedom. And it's funny, actually, because I'm interviewing Mark Webber tomorrow for my little breakfast show and I'm listening to his Audible book and he had a Ford Fiesta. And I'm like, yes, I had the same car as Mark Webber, holding my hands in the air. It's about the only car we probably had that's the same. That was my first car. And I remember saving up, it cost me £1,000. It took me weeks of Saturday selling men's shoes, which I hated.
What, Saxone, Freeman Hardy Willis?
Oh!
Well, do you know what I know? Because I used to work at Saxone myself.
Did you?
Yeah,
did
yeah. You? In fact, I was a manager. I was a manager of Saxone in Silver Street in Durham for, I think, 2 months.
Is that the longest job you've ever kept?
It's the most serious kind of proper job, yeah. Yeah.
I used to work in the big department store called Beatis, which was quite high-end. So I used to sell Grenson shoes. And
Grenson, that's proper upmarket stuff, isn't it, Grenson?
Right, yeah. Yes. And then, do you remember, you used to get paid extra money if you sold what they called fancies.
Yeah.
That was like the little polish and all that stuff. It's so annoying, isn't it, when people go, oh, and this is good for your shoe. You think, no, I've got everything, but you haven't. When you get home, you've just got a bit of polish, haven't you? Normal furniture polish that everybody puts on their shoes.
Pledge. That does the job.
Pledge, exactly. So I worked there for a long time and saved up my money. And I bought my first car, which was a Ford Fiesta. And it was a Popular Plus, 1 litre, or 1.1 litre, I think it was.
And the colour?
Pale blue. And it was like a tin can, a Freedom. And I loved it. And I loved the fact that I could, you know, go to college, go to the pub, pick up my friends. Didn't have to have the taxi of mum and dad picking me up. And they were always brilliant. But to get in your own car and drive your own car.
Proper freedom.
I don't think there's another feeling of freedom like that. Apart from maybe when I pass my bike test, because that's kind of different. But
no, you're absolutely right. And I can remember, like both of you, just wanting for ages to pass my driving test. Of all the things that I did in terms of qualifications that you have to do through school, etc., passing my driving test was the one that I really cared about, the one that felt like a real landmark. And I can remember the day after passing my test, and I went out in my Auntie Carol's old Ford Fiesta 1.1. Likewise, it was in pale blue.
Auntie Carol.
Yeah, and she let me go to Londis in her Fiesta. And I can remember looking over to the passenger seat and it being empty for the first time. And I thought, this is just me. This is fantastic. I don't have anybody accompanying me. And actually, it's at that point when you actually really learn to drive, isn't it? It's, you only really learn when you're on your own and you can make your own mistakes.
Wow. Did you pass first time? Are you a first time passer?
Yeah, I did. And I felt like I was the cat's ass when I passed my test.
I beg your pardon?
When I got there, there was a female test instructor. She was doing my exam. And, you know, obviously back in the, what would it be, in the late 80s, I was hoping it was going to be a bloke.
Why?
Well, just because, you know, when you're sort of 17, 18, back in those days, you could have flirted a bit, you know, and got away with a dodgy hill start or something like that.
Yeah, rolling backwards. Ooh.
Ooh, automatic failure that was, wasn't it? Do you remember? Anyway, it was a woman and I passed first time, yes, and I was really excited. And I remember 2 days after I passed my test, I had to go to a modelling job in Leicester. And it was the first time that I'd been on the motorway on my own. And I was terrified.
They don't teach you that though, do they? That's the thing with motorway driving, is that actually you're right, your first experience is when you venture on there on your own, and it's a very different discipline.
It's bonkers really, isn't it?
I'd only been on a dual carriageway before, obviously going at the speed limit, so to go on a motorway, and I lived in Wolverhampton, so from Wolverhampton to Leicester, it was quite a daunting experience. And then when I got to Leicester, it's just a big one-way system, isn't it? And I must have spent about an hour and a half of extra time trying to get to the studio. And I could see it, but I couldn't actually get to it. And I got an A to Z map next to me because we didn't have sat navs in those days. I had to keep stopping, looking at my map, thinking, how do I get in there? Anyway, eventually I got there extremely flustered with a bright red face. Perfect for a modelling job.
So car history then, Susie, what followed the Fiesta?
I'm going to give you the most boring car history, I think, in all of your podcasts, because I had, after that, I had a Polo, which I bought from an ex-boyfriend. He was my boyfriend at the time. And that car sort of, as it did in those days, it did the rounds in my family. I think my brother had it after me, and then a friend had it, and then his mate had it. You know, I kept seeing it for years. It's probably still going. It's probably still going around.
Sign of a good car, though, isn't it, when they can get passed on?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that you had to have a good car then, didn't you? Your parents didn't buy you cars. You know, I had to buy everything myself. And so it meant a lot when you saved up and, you know, the sort of secondhand money you got back on your car as well to go towards your next car. It was all really important.
And cars used to go wrong back in those days. You know, stuff broke, didn't it? And cars broke down. Unlike today.
Yeah, and you had to have your, you know, your membership to the AA or RAC or whatever, and you had to really be able to change your wheel. I mean, that was one of the first things I learned to do, because obviously it's important. You don't want to be waiting for someone to do that for you. You can do it yourself. In my family, it was quite important to be able to maintain the basics. So, you know, I learned the basics from my dad, really, on how to look after things. I'm not saying that I can serve as a car, but I can certainly kind of, if I hear something going wrong, I normally know, you know, what's going wrong. And things went wrong in those days. And my car used to get hot-wired and, you know, it was a mess inside. Then I had the Polo. And then I think I had a Clio after that. I bought it secondhand, a Renault Clio, but the top. It was called the RT, I think. And my best friend had the same car. And we just thought we were it, driving around in our little Renault Clios. Black. I've always had black cars, apart from my Ford Fiesta.
Big stereo?
I had in my Clio a stereo, but I won a stack CD system on the radio, on Capital Radio in London.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the only thing I've ever won.
And was that a boot-mounted stacker?
Yes, it was.
They were very much cutting-edge technology then, you know, to actually have a stacking CD system.
Dave, they were. They remind me, I mean, I'm laughing now, but I laugh at my dad's 8-track, you know, because my dad used to have an 8-track in his Jaguar. And it reminds me, when I hear certain songs, it always reminds me of driving to Wales on holiday, which is what everybody did in Wolverhampton. we all just used to take Wolverhampton to Abu Dhabi or Aberystwyth for the summer, for some holidays. So my dad had this 8-track and he still got it at home with these great, massive, big cassettes of like Glen Campbell and Wings and bands, but great bands from the 70s, Steely Dan, Doobie Brothers, things like that. Really reminds me of being in the car. And then I had this access to, obviously we had cassettes and stuff, but to be able to have a multitude of changes without fiddling around and looking down, it was great. And I loved it. And I won it on Capital Radio. I was quite sad to see that car go. I had some really, really good times in that car. But then I, met a guy and got engaged and we sort of pooled our money together and it kind of went wrong from there on in, really. And it's another story. But we had two cars then between the two of us, and we had an Audi and a BMW 320i, which was nice. I didn't feel like it was very me, really. I feel better in a smaller, sportier kind of car, I suppose. And anyway, after all that dissolved a few years later, I got myself a Honda S2000.
Good motor.
And then life started looking up. And I love that car.
They are much underrated, I think, those cars.
Yeah, quick, fun, handle well, really good bits of kit.
But you don't often see them on people's sort of top lists of cars,
no.
Do you? You know, everyone talks about things like the MX-5, et cetera, mm-hmm. being a sort of perfect little two-seater, but they miss out the S2000.
Do you know what I loved about the S2000? It reminded me of being on a motorbike. And I think that's why people maybe don't put them on the list, Dave, because they were a bit afraid of them, because they were quite skitty, especially the early versions of them. I mean, if you went round a roundabout, that would swing out generally, even if the conditions were perfect. So you could kind of, really have fun with them. And I really enjoyed the kind of four-wheel, two-wheel comparison with that car. And I had about three of them, actually. That's how much in love with that car I was. And I suppose I was doing the coverage for motorbikes then. I was in my late 20s and I got a bit more racy and I was riding more bikes and I was testing bikes for different bike magazines and that kind of thing. So I was kind of enjoying going a bit quicker and feeling more at one with being in a car rather than just using it as a vehicle to get from A to B. You know, it's a bit more of a plaything. And they were great days. I just love that S2000. And, the fact that the top came off was extra special, I suppose.
And when did you get into bikes? How old were you when you did your bike test?
I was quite old, actually, because my brother had bikes when I was younger and scooters and things like that, which I'd, go on the back of occasionally. But I didn't ride myself until I was in my mid-20s. So, yeah, I was quite old. And that is because of my mum not allowing me, really. And she really, really was quite against both of us riding bikes, just from the danger element. And so when I learnt to ride a bike, I didn't tell them. I don't know if she's ever forgiven me, actually, but I had to go and do my bike test and it was pouring with rain and it was in Redditch, another land of roundabouts. And I did my bike test in this pouring rain and the instructor was behind me in a car. And I remember he was about 6'200". He was so tall. And I couldn't believe he was in a car. And I just thought, it's only a bit of rain. Get on your bike. Come on. Anyway, went out, passed. I did pass first time. I was actually as excited about passing my bike test as I was about passing the car test years earlier. Rang my parents and my mum just burst into tears. She just burst into tears and she went, but you're not going to ride, are you?
Do you feel at home on a bike?
Yeah, I do. I love that independence feeling, that feeling of freedom, I think it gives you. I like riding horses as well. There's a similarity between the two, although you can trust a bike more than you can trust a horse, clearly.
So a question for you, Susie, is that as someone who rides bikes and obviously has a passion for bikes, when you're a bike rider, can a car ever give you the same excitement? And by that I mean that one assumes that a motorbike is always more of a thrilling experience, therefore can you ever replicate that with four wheels? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, it's a very good question, actually, Dave. I think you can have great fun in a car. I mean, Jason and I had amazing fun around Rockingham. Do you remember filming for Fifth Gear? And we had a real laugh. Jason was basically teaching me to go fast around the track, And we were in, what were we in? Racing Clios or?
Do you know what? I think it was it. I think it was a Racing Clio, I think.
Yeah, I think it was. And it was really fun. And it was, honestly, at the end of that day, I probably couldn't have had more fun. And I went back to Rockingham not that long afterwards to film something for Sony. And I had to drive around in a Ferrari, a Porsche and a Lamborghini. I mean, it was a dreadful day, as you can well imagine. and I loved it. And the feeling of excitement, the feeling of, the power and everything was really amazing, and I loved it. And actually, they told me to slow down at one point, which was quite
good.
Cool.
Girl, that's what Lana
yes, thanks, Jace. but yeah, being on a bike, going quick on a bike, I would definitely say I go quicker in a car than I do on a bike. But yeah. I've ridden Pillion with some top names.
I was just about to ask that. Do tell, tell us. Have you been on the back with Rossi?
I have actually.
My God, what must that be like?
But however, it was not on a track. It was in London. We were doing a promo thing, and he was riding around on a... Gosh, he was with Honda at the time, so it would have been big, comfy Honda bike at the time.
What's the one I'm thinking of? With the huge panniers and stuff?
Yes.
Big, wide.
Yeah, the Goldwing. Is it the Goldwing?
Goldwing. Yeah, it was. It was a Goldwing. So it definitely wasn't, you know, going round Crane of Curves. It was different. But yeah, it was riding Pillion with Valentino Rossi, which was a lot of fun. And I was filming it at the time, and he was sort of giggling and laughing at everyone taking pictures of us. And it was just a really enjoyable experience. And I don't think many people can say they've ridden Pillion with Valentino. So
he must look tiny on a Goldwing.
Well, he's quite lanky. He's quite tall.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah,
I always thought
tall.
He was proper diddy. And I kind of just imagine him being like a little sort of 6-year-old child on a Goldwing.
No, he's tall. He's one of the tallest motorbike racers.
He's some dude, isn't he? I went down to the final race at Valencia maybe 3-4 years ago when he was in the shack with winning it. And in fact, Mark Webber organised the trip. It was a lad's trip. And it was great because we got everywhere. I mean, we literally were on the pit wall for the start of the race, and it was just like, we should we be here? But we had access to do what we liked. Anyway, we went into the Rossi's garage not long before the race, and I had I was in a trance. I couldn't stop staring at him. I was mesmerised by the presence the guy's got. He's something else, that fella, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a real one-off in the same way that Berrachine was, that James Hunt was, that George Best was. There's an energy that they have. They can walk into a room and you can have your back to them and you know someone's walked in the room. It kind of physically goes all the way around you. And, you know, people talk about charisma and they overuse the word. This guy has it in spades. And, you know, everyone says to me, oh, he's the next Valentino Rossi. There's not a next Valentino Rossi thing. It doesn't work like that. No. They come around once every 30 years or something like that. What you get with Valentino actually is a complete 100% focus on you. So when you interview him, you feel as though you are the only person in the whole world and that he's telling you something really exclusive. And he's probably just told the same thing to 10 people. But he has a way about him of making you feel it is. And the other person that has this, and I've only met him very briefly once, is Tom Cruise. So
really?
He famously remembers people's names. He's also incredibly charismatic and incredibly tiny. But yeah, it is this, it's an incredible way their brain works in that they just make you feel very important. And to me, all bike races in MotoGP, British Superbike, World Superbike, you know, Speedway, whatever the challenge, they all have this kind of untouchable psyche where you think, I love what you do, but I don't know how you do it. Mm. And road racing as well. And John McGuinness, I think John McGuinness was on your trip, Jace, to Valencia.
He was,
Because what a VIP private jet you had flying over, didn't you? You should just reel out the names of who was on that jet.
Oh, it was fantastic. There was Adrian Newey, Paul Stewart, John McGuinness, Webber. Dougie Lampkin, myself.
Was DC there?
No, DC wasn't there, which I think everybody apart from me and John McGuinness were quite pleased because it would have gone over the top. and me and John were trying to get it to go over the top, and we just couldn't quite tip them over.
But also, Jason, presumably you would have had that fear that many people have in that kind of situation, where you suddenly think when you're in the air, if this plane goes down, I won't even make the headline.
Motorsport royalty and Jason Plato.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it was. But what a trip.
Right, I have a car question for you, Susie Perry, and this could be a tough one. Of all the cars that you have owned, imagine you were only allowed to keep one of them for the rest of your days, to last you forever. One car and one car only. So bearing in mind, this has got to do everything. Which do you choose and why?
Oh, would it be a car, though?
Well, it might. Who knows? Do you know what? Given it's you, it could be a bike.
Oh.
Sorry, that came out wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah, thanks. the things I've had thrown at me over the years. You're that bike. That's what some people just say. You're that bike. I'm like, not a bike. You're that biker girl. You're that girl that talks about bikes. Car. It would have to be a car, I think, because I'm a bit fair weather when it comes to bikes these days. I mean, I'm getting on a bit now, so I have to be a bit careful. got a bad back and all that. I think it would be, I mean, I've ridden, my bike that I've been riding over the recent years has been a Triumph Bonneville. But I think if I was going to pick a car, I'd probably go back to my S2000, you know.
Would you?
And I'd have to just be at home if it snowed, because obviously you can't drive that bugger in the snow, can you?
Well, not unless you've got three big sacks of potatoes in the boot to hold it down.
I'd pick the S2000. That would be my car. But I wish now I'm talking to you, that I'd actually got my car that I've always wanted to have, which is a classic Mercedes SL.
280 SL?
Yes, 280 SL.
Oh,
yes.
My fave.
Is it?
Yeah, well, do you know what? When I lived down not far from Sue's, that was the car I had. I had a 280 SL Pagoda in silver with red leather interior. And me and my old man spotted it on the internet, and it was a famous dealer in Switzerland called Auto Salon Singen. Anyway, we shot up there, we did the deal with them. We got, you know, we found a couple of things on it which actually we could just nibble a bit off. And it was lush, this thing. It was beautiful. And I had it 2.5 weeks, and then I had it nicked from valet parking.
Wow, really?
Did you?
Yeah. Went back the next day, checked in my ticket. Guy just took forever. Came back and says, "We can't find the car." I'm like, no. No, but it gave me the keys. That was it. Gave me the keys back. I went, "That's no good. I don't know where the car is." He went, "We don't know. It's gone." So, yeah. And then I obviously had to go to the police, and the police almost accused me of, "You nicked your own car." I'm like, no, I really haven't. So yeah, and then they obviously looked back at the CCTV and they saw it leave the principality at very early in the morning, like 4:30, going out towards Italy. And that was it. Never seen again.
I was about to say that it's the sort of car that if you were ever lucky enough to own one, you'd never want to part with it, would you? Especially not these days with what they're worth.
Mm, yeah.
I'm stunned by that story. I hate that.
And do you know what? God, I wish I had it now, because I forget. I think it was about €60,000 I gave for it. What would she be worth now? Well, in fact, it would be something which I honestly don't think I would sell, because they're just lush, aren't they?
Beautiful. Well, you know, Nico Rosberg's got one.
Yes, and DC's got a nice one as well.
Yeah, so Nico's is 1970, pale blue, cream leather interior. Well, I was born in 1970, and I said to him, I remember at dinner once saying to him, You need to give that car to me. You need to sell it to me and give it to me, obviously. Have it, Suze. No worries. You're a great interviewer. So, I wanted him to sell me his car, but he treats it like another child in his family. And he takes it on a trailer to places like Gorge du Verdon, like really nice places around here, and then just drives it around, pops it back on the trailer, and then drives it back.
So that answers perhaps another question we were going to ask. Would that be your dream car?
Yeah, well, it is. And I've loved those classic Mercedes since watching Dallas. It's Bobby Ewing's fault. Mm. You know, he used to drive down the gravel driveway in an old Mercedes, didn't he? A classic Mercedes. And I just loved it. From the age of 8, 9, I wanted my parents to get one of those cars, and they didn't.
Well, they're not too expensive now. It was the 500 SL, wasn't it? The boxy one.
I think it was the 500 SL. Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah.
They're not too dear, actually, yet. I think they're probably going to keep climbing.
We know what your dream car is. So what would be your dream drive or ride. So you can either be on a bike somewhere, where are you, where are you going? Or you can be in your dream car, where are you, where are you going?
Okay, well, I will be on a bike for this. I would like to be on the Triumph that Steve McQueen rode in The Great Escape. And I would like to be driving. My favourite drive is in South Africa, actually, from Cape Town all the way along the coast road, past Noordhoek Beach, through Chapman's Peak. It's about a two-hour ride, and you go all the way around the edge. And it's so wild, the Atlantic, and you see monkeys, and you see, well, baboons, and just fantastic wildflowers, and the ocean is just crashing up onto the side, and you can stop at these little beaches that you can only get to, you know, if you're kind of going off the beaten track. That I think that would be my favourite ride to do.
That is a mega road, that.
You know, sometimes when you're driving or riding, you feel very alive. I think the elements around there and the surroundings make me feel the most alive I can feel, unless I'm a heightened state of adrenaline, I think, and where all your senses go ping. That's what I experienced actually when I was riding Pillion with Randy Mamola and Steve Parrish and various other different people. When you're going really fast, then you're just kind of hanging on.
Hanging on for grim death.
Love it.
I'm going to fess up to something. I had a chance to get on the back with Randy at Donington years ago, and I bailed out.
Why?
I'm very nervous passenger.
You pussy.
But I so regret it now.
Yes,
but I just know I would have hated it until I was safe, and then I would have loved it.
You would have loved it going down Craner. I mean, that...
No, that's exactly incorrect. I would have hated it until I got off the boat, and then I would have loved it.
I'm with you as well. The thing with me, I find being on a pillion on a motorbike terrifying. Just not being in control. And it's just, I think it's that overriding fear of death that just ruins it for me.
Well, you don't want to let that get in the way of living, that fear of death, because that's, you know, obviously going to happen to all of us at one point. But I think if you're on the back with somebody like Randy or, you know, Parrish or somebody that's a really good rider, then that's okay, isn't it? I think Pillion on the road is not exciting. That's why I learned to ride myself. I didn't like it because you feel like you're somebody's human backpack. And it's a bit boring, isn't it? Whereas when you're obviously in charge of your own machine, that's a completely different feeling.
Jason, regrettably, we're going to have to wrap it up.
Oh, do we have to?
I didn't realise we'd started recording.
Oh, that's... See?
I told you it was relaxed, didn't I?
Do you know what? I don't think I've completely answered one of your questions yet. We just keep veering off all the time. I'm sorry if I didn't complete the story.
To be honest with you, the questions are just there as some kind of rough structure, but ultimately we just like to have a nap.
I thought JP was there for the rough structure.
That's about it for this episode of Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or your home insurance. And a big thanks to our special guest this week, the gorgeous Susie Perry.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Ah, the pleasure's been ours. Now, don't forget to get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us, you know, that 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share the podcast on all your socials. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.